I'm green.
All right, now then, good. I can hear myself now. At any rate, this meeting of State Geographic Information Council is being held according to the Open Meetings Act. And we have posted on the front of this building an agenda item in compliance with that. If you would, I'd like to ask you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We do have a sign-in sheet by the door. If you haven't signed in, we'd like for you to, so we can keep you up to date on council activities and so forth. So do that following the meeting. That'd be great if you haven't already done that. Also, according to tradition, we go around the room and introduce ourselves and who we represent. And we're going to start up here at the front with Mike.
Mike Sexton, Oklahoma Department of Commerce.
Kathy Hines, Center for Spatial Analysis.
Andrea Cruz, Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation.
Jay Adams, Department of Transportation.
Mike Shagrew, Water Resources Board.
Kim Carter, Oklahoma Office of Homeland Security.
Mike Sharp, Conservation Commission.
Troy Frazier, Oklahoma Tax Commission.
Jane Weber, Oklahoma Geological Survey.
David DeLock, Department of Agriculture and Forestry.
Leroy Lobby, representing the state government.
Michael Larson, for the state geographer.
Dick Clark, with the Office of State Finance.
Dan Huff, the Oklahoma Biological Survey.
Shelley Willoughby, Office of Geographic Information.
Mike Thrall, Conservation Commission.
Charles Brady, City of Ardmore.
Department of Transportation, Tom Redbarger.
Ken Tucker, Department of Transportation.
Darrell Williams, U.S. Geological Survey.
Jennifer
Smith,
ACON.
Darla Hagelbaum,
ACON.
Brian Schroeder, ACON.
Jared
Smith,
U.S. Geological
Survey.
Sean Siegel, Jessica
Kennedy. Lourdes Cisco, Engineering Company.
Brian Salcedo, Public Engineering.
Brian Stinson, Surdex Corporation.
Gail Metropolitan Julie Adams, Natural Resources Conservation Service.
Ron Paul, Aerospace Service Corp.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for being here. Appreciate that. First item is approval of the November minutes. Minutes have been circulated to the council members. Does anybody have any changes or corrections to the minutes? If there are none, I'd entertain a motion to approve.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second. Motion been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Same sign, opposed. Okay, minutes have been approved. Okay, next item, consultation with the Conservation Commission Executive Director Mike Crawls concerning the appointment of Dr. Mike Sharp as the State Geographic Information Coordinator per Title 82, Sections 1501-205.3.5. Mr.
Crawls. Thank you, Mike. I'm the other Mike at the Conservation Commission. Pleasure to appear before you this morning with this consultation process. Last November, I turned 61, and I've been married, I think, 42 years. I received this card. It said son-in-law. Some people are born great. Some achieve greatness. Some have greatness thrust upon them, and some marry into greatness. Glad you're in our great family. So, I keep that with me and kind of remind me of the appropriate attitude that I should have when I address any group. Anyway, Mike's been acting state geographer for a couple, 3 years. And in the meantime, the legislature passed House Bill 1086 last year, has some requirements of the office, and I thought it would be appropriate that we just go ahead and make that appointment. The reason we hadn't done an appointment was because we didn't really have adequate funding for the office, and we've been patching it together, and we actually devote just a piece of Mike's time to that. But I thought it would be appropriate that we go ahead and make that appointment. However, statute asks that I consult with the GIS Council, and that's the reason I'm here today. I do have a letter that makes the appointment with me if I Since the consensus of the council, then I'm prepared to go ahead and make that appointment and ask that it be entered into your minutes today. But with that introduction, I'll consult. Anybody have an objection? Is there a reason that we should not proceed with that appointment?
I move that we agree with Executive Director Mike Rawls' desire to appoint Dr. Mike Sharp as Secretary or as the State Geographic Information Coordinator.
Second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
Thank you for your action. Congratulations, Dr.
Thank you, sir.
Well, like I heard one guy say here recently, I come to work Mondays, but it'll be just the same as today and it was yesterday. So nothing's changed. Okay, moving on. Committee reports. We've got a couple. First, we'll have a land cover report from Dan Hunt.
Okay, we have some updates on progress. The Wildlife Department has agreed to provide $25,000 for us to get started on the land cover project. So with that money, we'll be able to hire the field tech and get things rolling on what you need to do and all that's going on there. Some planning, there'll be some meetings with the Texas group there. And probably fairly soon set up a meeting of interested persons in the state to come up with the legend for the map. So we'll get started on that. We do have committed $200,000 from the Gulf Coastal Prairie Land Cover Landscape Conservation Cooperative has $200,000 allocated for the project. So I'm assuming that's where we'll be starting. That's the what I call the cross-campus part of the state. So this central to eastern third or so of the state. And we also have a commitment for some money from the Western Governor's Conference.
For what?
From the Western Governor's Conference. Okay, I'm not sure how much that is, but anyway. I was hoping Alan Dennis would be here today with some more information. But anyway, as far as the surveys part goes, we'll be starting that up fairly soon and get things going.
It'll be good to see some products come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Mike, I have something to add. Alan Dennis couldn't be here. It was another meeting. Yeah. He did ask me to tell you guys that there's going to be a ground cover webinar with the MoRap group. There was one back in August, and it's going to be, but for those who couldn't make it, it's going to be January 25th, Wednesday at 10 a.m., and I understand that he's going to ask Shelley to send the information out to everybody, so be looking for that email, I guess, next week or something.
Okay, thanks, Andy. Okay, the address standards committee has met, and I know Charles had some homework that he was going to be working on, so you might just brief us on what's going on there.
Okay. We took, and Shelley and Mike and Soville and Troy met together right before Christmas. We're looking at trying to have something that's functional that Oklahoma can use as a base schema to go ahead and toss it out to anybody who would like to be able to start geocoding, whether it be for 911, whether it be for dispatch, whether it be for just simply trying to find points on a map from addresses. We kind of narrowed it down to looking through Kansas, Missouri, and Arkansas's models. We're kind of pulling from all those with the language. We've narrowed it down to some core functionality fields, and we're going to take and start with those fields to say this is what is required to do geocoding with the point and line classes. And then while we're starting off, we might as well start off right. Go ahead and have some extra additional optional fields. So if you want to do routing, you add these four fields. If you want to take and do 911 dispatch, you add these three fields. So everything across the state, if anybody wants to start a brand new geocoding, operation, whether you have a new county coming in that's going to start up 911, they don't always necessarily listen to the vendor, but they go, what's the state using? What will comply with the state? So at some point in time, if you want to take and bring them together, they're actually seamless across, you know, the state of Oklahoma. I know that Troy's visited with a couple of the COGs and pulled some of the COG data. I pulled several counties that are having functional 911s right now, so it's live data we're working with. We should probably have something. We could probably toss either with the listserv or something of that nature, let people look at it and see if it would fit your application. Just keep it as standard as possible with the options. If you want to let it grow, it can grow and all develop in kind of the same direction. So that pretty much sum it up.
Okay, this actually will be probably one of the first standards that we'll bring to the council to approve. And once approved, then this will go out per this House Bill 1086 notice to state agencies that this is how we would like to see databases constructed that have address, location data in it, so that we have some standard to work with there. So
one thing that we've looked at is not to try to take and reinvent the wheel or take anybody that has an existing system and make them change anything. Most of the softwares that let you do geocoding of some type just say, these are the required fields, what are they named? You're not going to change names or anything of that nature. It's just, you know, implementing new ones and then also integrating the old ones. So hopefully it should be something that people can use across the platforms and not too much of a change. If your system's already geocoding, it shouldn't really change anything they're doing anyway.
Trying to stay consistent with the national standards been established. The FGDC has been working on in conjunction with the NENA, the 911 Association folks as well. So. Okay, thanks, Charles. Okay, next we have a presentation today by Jay Adams with ODOT on their automated permitting and routing system for oversized and overweight vehicles, which is a pretty awesome amount of work that they've done over there. Really amazed at what you guys came up with in a relatively short amount of time.
Short amount of time, with a lot of political pressure, and the running joke was when we started this project, I actually had hair. And as a result, look what happened. I'm not going to try to go through too many things today. We usually have pretty limited time. I don't know. You know, we kind of get blinded sometimes when we're driving down the road, seeing trucks like this here. But, I mean, think about how many times you see a truck heading down the road. It's got the big flashing vehicles on either side of it because it's got a wide load or it's got a tall load coming through. Normally we think, well, that's probably not too many of them, is it? Right now, the Department of Public Safety, their Science and Weights Office, is issuing between 1,000 and 1,100 permits a day for oversized and overweight loads. That is a lot of stuff that's going through there that you don't even realize. And the economy is starting to pick up, and the more it picks up, the more these things pick up as well. And it's becoming quite an issue. What I always start off with here a little bit is, I never realized quite how politically charged this actual topic is. About 2.5 years ago, I got called over to the legislature. Several of the representatives have been getting consistent calls from the trucking industry with a lot of complaints saying, hey, you know, it's taking too long for us to get our permits, it's hurting us. From our, you know, business standpoint, it's going to hurt the state from an economic development standpoint. You guys got to do something, because at the time we were doing it all manually, or actually DPS was doing it manually. Actually, if I described to you the way that they were actually doing the permits, it would actually scare you to death. There was no consistency. There was tons of room for inaccuracies and mistakes. So basically, they called me over and said, all right, Jay, called you over because, number one, DOT has the bulk load of data that would go along with this. When you're talking about restrictions, you're talking about the road, you're talking about construction projects, you're talking about bridges, you're talking about the vertical clearance of a bridge and the horizontal clearance of a bridge, and how much weight the bridge can handle. So ODOT had to be involved with it, and actually, we were the only ones at the time that had actually been successful in large-scale IT implementation, so that's why they called us over. And they basically said, all right, Jay, this is what I want. They wanted a truck driver that's sitting in Amarillo, Texas, at 2 o'clock on a Saturday morning to be able to get his laptop, log into the Oklahoma system, enter his information, give it his origin and destination, get a safe route sent back to him and his permit, allow him to pay for it, and have it all back to his truck in 15 minutes. Well, of course, at the time, they brought in the crash cart and kind of shocked me back alive, because when I first heard that, I thought, you got to be kidding me. But that's what we set out to do about 2 years ago. They wanted a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week system, which that's something that's kind of new. I never realized the financial transactions, just their credit card transactions alone. They're doing $65,000 a day in credit card transactions. And we hooked that up through the OK.gov. OK.gov actually didn't believe that we were going to be sending that much over. The second day the system was online, we brought the credit card servers down. And so it's been, you know, quite a challenge. And they wanted all the computers to make the decisions and allow this to go through. And I love the fact everybody would look at me and go, that should be easy, right? Other thing we had a deal with, we have two different agencies involved. And when you got two different agencies involved, you got some issues you got to deal with, because you're dealing with yours, mine, and ours. This is run by DPS. Enforcement is done through DPS. Size and weight, the law enforcement, all the finance stuff is through DPS. Through ODOT, you've got all the bridge and the road data. You've got all the engineering, the public safety that we deal with. And, you know, they put all the onus on ODOT because we were the only ones that got that successful implementation done. And then what we really ran into, and this is what has really bothered me the most, was project management. Who do you answer to? And believe it or not, you answer to everybody at all times. I've got the legislature saying, hey, it's my money. I want to know exactly what's going on, when it's going on, and how it's going on. I've got DPS talking about, hey, it's our laws and our employees, what's going on? And then, of course, I've got my own engineers at ODOT saying, hey, you can't do anything without, you know, engineering it first. So you're basically, we were answering to several different people in several different areas. So the real challenge here was the management of the project and the ownership of the project. Who actually was going to take ownership of this whole thing? What our evaluation on this entire project was for the legislature, our business problem was we have rapid growth of oversized and overweight permits and unacceptable times to provide safe routes and permits for the trucking industry. They were having to wait up to 3 days to get a permit. And in these, you know, economic times, you just can't make a business hold for 3 days before they actually get to do something. What we were told on the solution, we wanted to develop an internet-based routing and permitting solution. We want to generate the permits in a timely manner on a 24-hour system and have it get back to them on a quick basis. The benefits, of course, the trucking industry could maintain critical schedules and the state wouldn't have to sacrifice any public safety. And long-term, we're looking at an overall increased economic development through the state of Oklahoma. You know, we're at the crossroads, I-40, I-35, I-44. We are perfect places for trucking industries to have hubs at. If we can actually make business easier for them, that actually can help produce economic development throughout the state. And actually, in the future, I've been working with some of the other states about maybe even taking this solution out into the cloud and actually having several states being able to access the same system altogether. So that way, a trucking industry, if they're going from Texas to Minnesota, they might be able to just go to one location and get a permit to get them through every one of the states. And I'm working with all the different states right now on that. Like I said, business problem, increased safety and protection of the infrastructures is critical. You know, we're an agriculture, oil, and gas state. All right, so most of our big loads are oil rigs, type of equipment. And then, of course, our wind power, those blades that they're moving to all these wind farms are huge. Of course, the increased pressure from the trucking industry, I'll tell you something. That's the only reason that I lost most of my hair through this 2 years is dealing with them. because interesting group of people, but they can be pretty darn mean when it comes to a lot of this stuff. All right, so what we did was we developed a kind of a solution for this. I interviewed 20 different states, said, all right, you know, what are you guys doing? And actually, I had almost every one of the states going, I don't know, what are you doing? Those that had tried to do something, I talked with California for quite a while. They spent 4 years and $14 million trying to build an oversized and overweight automated system. And after 4 years and $14 million, they couldn't make it work and trashed it. And they're going to start all over again. The only one that was actually semi-successful was Texas. And although we kind of partnered together and worked together on some of the technology issues, even they are starting to have a few of the issues. Right now, what we've developed, we launched in November, and the state of Utah has gone with our solution. California is putting out their bid, and they're going to go with our solution. And in the next year, you'll see Colorado, Kansas, Nebraska, Iowa, and New York actually going with the solution that we came up with. The components of this basically were three main components: permitting, routing, and restriction management. Restriction management was the key. That's where I saw most everybody was failing. They could do permitting. Permitting's easy. That's a form on the web. No big deal. Routing actually is not hard either. Google's doing it. Everybody's doing it. You can actually utilize them to do a lot of the routing stuff. The problem that everybody faced, and the problem that California had that could make work, was managing your restrictions, knowing where all your construction zones are at and what kind of vehicles you can allow through it, knowing where all your bridges are at, how tall those bridges are, how wide those bridges are, allowing what trucks could go underneath this bridge or over the top of this bridge. That was the key component that I saw everybody was having a major issue with. As I said, we started in November 2009. We went live in November of 2011. The system's been online now for 2 months. As I said, the major pieces, I'm not going to go through all this stuff because it's not all that interesting, but the major pieces was Restriction Manager and integrating what we call our Virtus Live Load Analysis, where we can analyze every bridge based on each individual truck on a live piece. One of the things we had to look at to make this thing successful as well is making sure that the public and the state agencies felt comfortable using it. Now remember, we're turning this out to the wide world of trucking industries out here, and that means we've got a lot of people out there utilizing this. We needed them to feel comfortable. So what we did is we took Google and we ran Google into the main format of this. So that way when they see a map and they see these routes, they feel comfortable with it. That's what they're used to. In fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you right quick one of the things that I always talk with people. This is just a simple Google thing. How many people, I mean, when they're ready to take their family on vacation, they go out to Google Maps and they put in their home and they put in where they're going to take the family on vacation and they get a route. And the route gives them, you know, how many miles it is and probably about how long it's going to take you to drive it. And even gives you some, you know, driving directions through here. Problem with Google though is, what Google doesn't tell you is along this route through here, it doesn't tell you that right here at Woodward, heading south for 8 miles, there's a construction project that won't allow anything more than 10 foot wide through that area. They don't know that I might have 11 foot wide, you know, vehicle, but it doesn't tell me that I can't go through that area because of that restriction. It doesn't tell me that up here in Dodge City, there's a bridge that is only 14 feet 6 inches tall, and I happen to have a 15 foot tall vehicle. It doesn't tell me that. That's where we got into the major difference. Now, Google does a great job of this, but our main focus was we had to be able to not only give them a route, but then also show them where they could and could not go safely. And that was the main issue that we were dealing with. Back to here. So everything in our route planner also utilizes the Google platforms as well. This is basically a very simplified version. Almost everybody has a road network. You know, in your GIS system, you've got the lines that shows you this is this road, this is this road, and it gives you a good map and a good frame of reference. We have a road network. Problem is now, how do we make that road network intelligent with all the information that we need to put on it? Because what I need to do is I need to apply restrictions to this road. I need to say that right here is a 14-foot tall vertical clearance. So that means that anything that's coming through this area can't be more than 14 feet tall. I need to tell it that this is a one-way section here, and this is a one-way section. That's a one-way section. I need to tell it that I've got a roadway width here of 18 feet, and therefore I can't allow anything, you know, wider than that. Or I might have a construction project here that I've got cones set up and they can't go through that area. That's the main problem, is applying all these different restrictions intelligently to your road network. Then what you do is you take your truck dimensions. Every time they go in and do an application, they put in their height, their width, their length, their axle spacings, and their width, and their weight along each one of the axles. And we take all that information and then apply that to do an analysis of where they can go on anywhere in the road network. So by doing that, they can enter their origin and destination, and the system will analyze which way they can actually travel safely and which ways they can't. The main technical problems we had with this, of course, it's pretty cutting-edge technology. We hadn't found a lot of people that were successful with this, so we were kind of breaking some new ground. The IT infrastructure and support on this was also tremendous. We brought in application servers for the production system and then also for our test system. We set up a different test environment, so that way anything we did as far as code changes or anything, we could do test and not affect production. And we were confident it's working before we moved it over. Remember, production is a 24-hour a day, 7-day a week system. So you don't want to touch production unless it's absolutely, you know, critical. And then conflating all of the data up to, we utilize NavTech as our baseline because of all of its addressing and routing functions through it. But conflating all of the Oklahoma data to it, conflating all of our bridge data, all of our construction information, all that up to that system, that was a nightmare. And it is a process that is major. We also had to change out our firewall for ODOT, because think about, you know, if they're doing 1,000 permits a day, you know, you've got a lot of people hitting this thing on a consistent basis at all hours of the day. So we had to have a bigger, better, meaner firewall to be able to handle all that. But when it all came down to the end of the day, the data, of course, was the critical aspect. I'm telling you, whenever you do something of this size, you find out where your flaws are in your data, and you find it out real quick. You might think that everything is just hunky-dory in what you've got, and then you start putting it up against something like this and doing, you know, live analysis on it, and you start hyperventilating on a quick basis. So I always tell everybody the lessons learned is always important in a project, and it's always the good, the bad, and the ugly for all of this. From the good part, I mean, we had consultants that I mean, we ran over budget on several different things, but they didn't, you know, care. They wanted to see this to be successful as well. So we had good commitment for the consulting groups that worked with us. We had good commitment from a lot of the legislative people as well. Even when we were fading a lot of heat, they were sticking with us and supporting us. The bad, I love this. You never have that crystal ball when you really are starting a project like this. If I had a do-over again, I probably would have chosen something other than NavTech. NavTech's naming conventions for roads are not accurate, and that was a major problem. We had to go in and work with them for a long time trying to get all this stuff, you know, up to speed. Our bridge locations were horrible. I mean, just absolutely horrible. And we had to go in and literally manually adjust most of our bridge locations to make sure that it was lining up with the routing system. And of course, this is something that just tore me smooth up. U-turns. When you're programming routing, all it looks at is, does this line connect with this line? Right, that's all it does. So if I'm coming down through this area, but I've got a restriction that blocks me here, if there's a little line, like a little crossover in the middle median of the interstate or something, that doesn't really exist, but for some reason NAVTEC saw it and actually put it in there, I'd have that thing doing U-turns on the interstate for me. That was something else that was a major issue that we had to deal with. Of course, then there is the true ugly of the things. My first project manager for the project, we had fired. He had no idea what he was doing, and we had to start over again with a new project manager. We had a lot of communication issues between the two agencies. It was difficult. And of course, we've always got the legislative issues because they're over your shoulder and breathing down your neck on a regular basis. And then we had the regular ownership issues because ODOT was leading the charge on the IT development, and DPS was basically the ones that used the system, and yet whenever something would go wrong, they'd just say, well, somebody needs to go talk to ODOT. We don't know. They put their hands up. So we had to get people to really start owning the system and taking ownership of that. Like I said, on the benefits for the industry, you know, we're going to do a heck of a lot better job in maintaining critical, you know, items and helping them do their jobs better. The state, we're not going to sacrifice any of our public safety, and we're actually going to streamline a lot of our workflows. The economic development is going to be a huge thing. That's a big political item right now, and anytime you can increase economic development potentials, they're going to love you for it. And overall, we're going to save a lot, you know, in the state on this. And of course, like I said, the working with the surrounding states is going to be a big issue. Always like to put the end right there on the back of that truck. Let me show you a little bit in this route planner, because a lot of times we're sitting there going, well, this is GIS. Why are we actually talking about this? Really, GIS is the cornerstone of all of these items that we're doing. And one thing I will say, in all my years with GIS, thank God for it, because it definitely makes our job a heck of a lot easier and a lot better. We do a lot of things utilizing an intelligent mapping system. The route planner, like I said, is just a one of the components of the overall system, but it's the one that really goes in on the GIS part, so that's what I wanted to show you guys. The baseline here is Google. As you can see, it looks just like, you know, the Google Streets. You've got the slide bars just like Google does. By the way, I'm running live just on the internet, so this isn't loaded on any of the machines. You've got the same functions. I can drag, I can double click, I can zoom in. One of the things I found out, though, little roller balls on the mouses, I found out real quick that you can't control real easy with those things. Second day that the system was online, I had one of the permit agents call me over to their workstation and said, I'm seeing nothing but white. It's broken. What's going on? And I'm looking at it going, why is it white? I mean, there was nothing on the screen. So I finally noticed that the zoom-in thing was really zoomed in, so I started backing it out. She had been using her rollerball and spun it. Well, remember, this is Google. It had rotated and went into Antarctica. And I mean, zoomed in to the point that there was nothing but white sitting there. So I had to train everybody, don't use your rollerball, use, you know, your normal controls, because you can lose control of it pretty easy. But as you see, it's a basic Google interface. We also pulled in several of the other areas, like the Google Physical. For those down in eastern Oklahoma, they really like to see some of the terrain issues for this. And we also have Google Hybrid, so that way those that are getting into really close areas, they can get the aerial photographs to go along with it. So it's all part of their normal routine, and they're used to it. They're comfortable with this, so if they're comfortable with it, it makes them easier to want to learn how to do it. But one of the things that I've always noticed, I mean, I've been working for ODOT for 26 years, and maps have been my life. Tom here has been one of the best map makers in the business, and I've learned a ton from him, but maps has always been everything that I've ever known. So I understand maps. If somebody wants me to go up and point somewhere into the map and say, where's Medill, Oklahoma? I can point right there and say, right there's Medill, because I can understand and read maps real well. Problem is, we're putting this out to the general public, and they can't always. A lot of people have a hard time actually understanding what a map's telling them. So what we did was, up here at the top, we put in what we call a selector, a map selector. This gives them the ability to key in certain pieces of information and make the map conform to it. Like for the cities, it defaults to a city location. So if I'm actually putting in a city, I can type the letter H and it'll filter down all my cities. I bring all my city data in from the tax commission based on their shape files. And then if I want to, you know, narrow it down a little bit more, I'll type in an O, and then that gives me, like for Hobart. And then if I click on that, it automatically zooms the map in for me. And all it is it's a zoom function based on the city boundaries that we get from the tax commission. We can also do that for counties. We have our ODOT divisions. We can do it for different types of highways, interstates, state highways, troop boundaries, because remember, we're dealing with the DPS as well. But one of the things that was the most important was our section, township, and range piece. Most of the permits done by the trucking industry is through, you know, oil projects. And really all they have when they're trying to get their permit is, I got an oil rig in section this, township this. So they don't know exactly how to they find it on the map. So we basically built in a deal where you can go to section 31, you can go to township 16, north, and let's say range 20 west, and it'll automatically take you right to that 1 square mile piece there, and it'll even tell you what county it's in. Those that are surveyors, I didn't realize this until I actually got into this project. Those are surveyors. You know, we have duplicate section, township, and ranges in Oklahoma. I didn't realize that. I honestly did not. But I got a survey lesson that when they surveyed Oklahoma down Indian Meridian, and they did everything on, you know, range east and range west over here, and they got the one down south where we got township north and township south. They did that whole area, but when they did that, the panhandle at that time was no man's land. All right, so there was no survey on that. Well, later when we got the panhandle in, they surveyed the panhandle, but they didn't continue the range west over. They just started over again with range east. So the panhandle has range and township that matches the same thing down in southeastern Oklahoma. You could literally draw the panhandle down in southeastern Oklahoma because it has the same section, township, and range. That was a problem. That's why we had to put in this county selector here, because in that situation where you put in and we've got duplicate section, township, and ranges, it'll tell you, all right, I've got this one in Cimarron County, and I got this one down here in Pontotoc County. And that way they can select between the two. A little lesson that I had no idea about. So basically, they have all these different functions they can do for this. Now, really all they have to do is do an origin and a destination. In the selection of origin and destination, they can do a map click, they can type in a street address, they can do an intersects width. They can say, well, I'm coming in from Texas on Interstate 40, so they can do an I-40 Texas state line intersection, and it'll automatically find the point for them. We can do it by, you know, GPS coordinates. You can see down here we've got lat long. Well, no matter where you put your cursor at, we've got the lat long that goes along with it. And of course you can do section, township, and range again here. Most everything is based on a map click. So I can actually click on that map. It's going to ask me, there's a 100% chance that's really what you meant. See, if I put it over here, it says, or I've got this intersection close by. So I can select on that. That locks in my origin. My destination, I put in the street address. Say I'm going to go to 1000. Southwest 74th and Oklahoma City. Okay, see, as I go through there, it's a smart screen, so I can just filter that down through. We lock that in. So now we tell it to generate the route. It's going to say, all right, well, oh man, I've got that address. There's 100% chance for that. It's also about a 86% chance there's one right there close to it, but we're going to select that one. Now what it does, when they do their permit, it's hard to see all the way from back there, but when they do their permit, all the truck dimensions comes over into the route planner. So it does an analysis of the height, the width, the length, and the weight of the vehicle. Once it takes in an origin and a destination, then it actually analyzes all the restrictions along the network based on this vehicle here, and then projects out a safe route for that area. Now I'm in the test system, so I don't have a lot of restrictions out there. But in this situation, if I had this vehicle had been 11 foot wide, in fact, let's change it and I'm going to show you how it does that. Let's change this vehicle to 11 foot wide. I'll be in the test system. If you can see from the top up here, it's actually in the test system. And of course, I don't have all the restrictions in test, but it analyzes any of the restrictions in that path and then generates accordingly. Also generates a turn-by-turn direction for the route, along with the total number of miles and the anticipated travel time. So it's just like Google. It also gives you the ability of selecting on one of the directions, and it'll actually zoom the map into it. It's all based on basically our GIS types of systems. Gives me my exit numbers, my locations. They utilize this to be able to, like I said, get a safe and an effective route. When you go to Google to do your family vacation, Google gives you basically the shortest route, or you can switch it over and say, well, I want the fastest, you know, route. In our situation, we do first the safest route. Then we look at what the mileages are and get the shortest route. Now, all of that is possible here through the cornerstone of the restriction manager. I'm going to show you the restriction manager real quick, because like I said, this is the one piece that we found everybody was having the most difficulty with. We implemented the third piece of restriction manager for all our field divisions, all the highway patrol, so that way if there's anything out there that should restrict movement inside of the area, they would actually have the ability to go in there and put that in. The top piece is basically a dashboard for our upper management, so they can go in and they can see that there's 40 on the U.S. highway system, there's 43 on the state highway system, there's 13 restrictions on the interstates. Or they can look at, we've got 49 width restrictions, 41 no oversize overweight, there's 6 weights, 49 on the widths there, 4 on the heights. So it just gives them a quick run through about how many restrictions are on the system. The actual restriction manager, we actually key in all the restrictions and then geocode them into the system, so that way we can actually see exactly where they're at. So we have not only just the data that goes in the database, but also the geometry that goes along with it. That ties in with our route planner, so that way you can actually analyze the geometry along with it. That way we can also be precise about these restrictions. This particular one is a 10-foot wide restriction for a widening resurfacing construction project through that area. So now it will actually know from this area that you can't go through there with anything wider than 10 feet. We have the start date and the end date for the project on there as well. The restriction manager is also smart. It knows what person entered it into the system. So 3 days before the expected end date, it actually emails that person and says, hey, you've got a restriction that's getting ready to end. Do you want to lift it or do you want to extend it? So that way it keeps them up to date. Because some of these projects, they could go 6 months long. Well, the engineer that entered it in 6 months ago might have forgot that it was still in there. So this thing will actually remind them. The other thing that it does too is when an engineer goes in and enters a restriction, it analyzes any permit that's already been approved that routes through that area. And if it sees one that was approved during that time that would now be in conflict, it emails the trucking company and lets them know that there's a new restriction in your travel path, contact DPS for a new route. So that way we're trying to cross both sides and make sure that they're up to date with the permit that they've got, along with the restrictions that we have out on the road, and try to limit the number of issues out there. Temporary restrictions are basically all of our construction projects, weather-related events. A couple months ago, we had that big snowstorm up in the Panhandle. Highway Patrol went in to the restriction manager, shut down all travel in Cimarron County and most of Texas County. And they actually went in through this and was able to shut it down. One of the actual side benefits we found from this is the road condition reporting that OHP does on their website. They're actually going to start utilizing this to generate a live map for their road condition reporting. Because all they have to do is search for any weather-related items, and then they can transfer it right over to their map on their website. Permanent restrictions. Now here's where it gets a little crazy. It's hard to see all the way back there in the back, but right down here at the bottom it tells me I've got 12,275 permanent restrictions out there. Now what that is that is every bridge on the state highway system. And every bridge has multiple restrictions to it. A bridge might have a vertical clearance, a horizontal clearance, and a weight restriction. If I've got a bridge that goes over, let's say I-40, and I-40 is divided through there, I've got a vertical restriction on the eastbound lanes, and I've got a vertical restriction on the westbound lanes. Plus, I've got the weight restriction that goes over on the top of it. Plus, I've got a horizontal restriction on the eastbound lanes, and I've got a horizontal restriction on the westbound lanes. We've got to monitor every one of those. And it doesn't matter how tall that bridge is. If that bridge is 20 feet tall, most people would say, well, why in the world would that be a restriction? And in most cases, you're absolutely right, it wouldn't be. But what if I've got a load coming through that's 21 feet tall? Now it's a restriction. So that means I've got to monitor every one of those, no matter how big or small. So that's why I've got 12,275 of these. This data comes from what we call our Pontus Bridge data. It's updated nightly, so that way if the bridge engineers see anything within less than 24 hours, it's updated into the system. Whenever one of our field guys puts in a temporary restriction for a construction zone, it goes up to DPS. DPS sees it, approves it to the system, and then it affects the routing system within 15 seconds. So then it generates any kind of a routing change. All based on basically the stuff we normally do on a day-to-day basis is GIS. We just kind of took it into a different level and a different direction than most people kind of go, really? I didn't think we would do something like that. But that's really what it's based on, is utilizing NavTech, a lot of their information, all the ODOT information as far as road information and bridge information and lanes, direction of travel. This thing is very sensitive as far as direction of travel. I was doing a training class the other day with one of the field division guys, and he was putting a restriction on I-40, just a test one. And he put the origin over here and put the destination over here. Problem was, though, the flow of traffic was this way. So he had it backwards. When he generated it, he said, what in the world happened? Because it went down here, went around through an interchange, went back over here, went around through an interchange, and came back here. So it started here, and it ended here, but it also went in the flow of traffic. Everything has a flow of traffic assigned to it. Directional traffic on every piece of line work out there. That was difficult. I'm not going to take up any more time, Mike. I know we've got some more things we got to go through, but that's basically kind of a nutshell of just the GIS component of this. The last thing I'll say is we launched in November. We spent the first 3 weeks of November manually going through every application that came through because we wanted to make sure, is the computer's making the right decision? I didn't think we'd live through that first 3 weeks because the trucking industry just had a total conniption because it was taking too long to get their permits out for us to do that manual review. But we satisfied everything, and we thought, okay, we're good with the way it was doing it. So we automated all permits of vehicles that were 14 foot tall or less, 16 foot wide or less, and met weight standards. It can be up to 202,000 pounds as long as the load is spaced out on an even basis. Once we turned that auto approval on and they were getting those permits in 15 minutes, all of a sudden a lot of the calls died down, and my mother's name wasn't being, you know, cursed out, you know, on a regular basis. And it's starting to flow pretty smoothly now. In the first 2 months that it was active, November and December. Now remember, we also have a lot of holidays through this time, so you don't have probably as many as what you normally have. But in the first 2 months, we did 44,000 permits. And we haven't had an accident yet, so I'm pretty happy about that. Questions?
Great question.
Yes, sir.
What level of detail do you go to? Like, because I know you're talking about bridges, but what about, like, I've seen, like, somebody's moving a mobile home or something, the power lines?
We don't have...
Are you actually routing the neighborhoods, or, I mean...
Yeah, we don't have power lines in there, and we don't route off the highway system. We have the ability of... They could select their origin and their destination off the highway system, but the principle of it gets it as quick to the highway as possible, takes it along the highway, and then gets it off the highway as quick as possible as well. State law stipulates that we can only permit on the state highway system. And quite frankly, that's the only place we actually know where the true restrictions are at. So that's the only thing we feel comfortable with as well. But state law also requires that anybody that gets a permit, if they travel off the highway system, they must consult the city and county officials as well.
So they already know that?
Yes.
Is this system used for anything other than size and weight, or like hazardous materials or anything else for that, or is there another system for that?
No, actually, right now it's only used for size and weight, but I have been talked to by Corporation Commission and several others about doing hazardous waste routing. Also been talking with McAllister on doing ammunition load runs. Military department's also been looking to us about some of their stuff. It's one of those that I don't think that we would probably get into it, but what we would do is share the technology with them, allow them to set up their own type of system, and then we could just feed them data.
So can you only use this if you're going to get a permit? You have to get your permit and stuff in advance, or can it, if you just wanted to plot a potential systems or potential force, get on the system and use it without actually buying a permit at the end?
No, actually you can. You could go through the entire permit process and do all your routing. You can work on different things. The actual payment of a permit doesn't come until the very end. So you can always go through the entire process and you can save it as a draft. That was a big, actually, component of that, because one of the problems we were getting into is a lot of the trucking companies were bidding on jobs, and they would, you know, bid out, the company would put out, hey, I need to move this from here to here, you know, and put out a bid. Well, we'd have, you know, 20 different companies that was wanting to bid on the project. What they would do in the past was they would actually call DPS and order a permit for that, and then if they didn't get the bid, then they would ask for a refund, you know, for their permit. Well, you got 20 permits coming in for one job, only one person got it, so then you got 19 refunds you gotta do. That was quite a deal. So one of the things we built into this is they can actually go through the entire permit process, the application, the routing, the finalization of it, they get all their restrictions, they get the cost, everything to it, then they can just save it as a draft. Go and bid on their job. If they get the job, then they can come back in and open that draft back up and finish it out and pay for it. If they didn't get the job, it only sits as a draft for 30 days and then it goes away.
How did you like that?
Not at first.
Really?
Not at first. But they did. They ended up overall. One other thing, too, I forgot to mention. Notice the website here. It's HTTPS. It is a fully secure website. We had to encrypt the entire servers and the whole function because we're doing credit card transactions through this. We've got FCC regulations on security. We are doing vehicle VIN numbers, tag numbers, you name it on all this. So the entire system is fully secure and locked down for all that. That was also another big thing. We'd never done that before.
Whenever you took the NavTech data and you said that it was doing the U-turns, things like that, and you modified and fixed your base map, how do you maintain that? Are y'all maintaining it? Basically, did it start off NavTech and then you just took over the maintenance of that, or do you take and push that back to NavTech? How is that taking to work?
What we ended up doing is the routing process, number one, you have the NavTech data, and you can get updates from them, you know, for things, but you don't really have the ability to delete things out.
That's what I was saying. You don't push your updates. Once you fix your copy and the new copy of their data comes out,
right,
you take and merge those two together.
What we did was the places we were seeing turnarounds at, especially these little crossover, you know, areas, they were coded in NavTech as emergency crossovers, or it might have been just a turning cross on there. We found where they are coded separately, and what we did was we applied for the routing part. We applied for the entire system a cost factor that says, all right, it's cheaper to drive on the interstate than it is on the U.S. highway. It's cheaper to drive on the U.S. highway than it is on the state highway. And what we do by that is you up the cost
and make it not logical for it to make that decision.
Exactly, and not cost
gotcha.
Deal for okay. it. So. They stay in there, but we put such a high cost factor on them that it steers clear of them. Now, the problem is sometimes that gets you into trouble because all of NavTech's codes are not always consistent through there. So when you do that and you start seeing some other issues, then you have to go in and make some, you know, fixes. We found a lot of that in highway namings, especially in our turn-by-turn directions. We'd actually get a section here that would go along this highway, but it would break it up into pieces. You know, 1 mile State Highway 3, 1 mile US 62, 1 mile State Highway 3, 1 mile US 62. Well, they weren't consistent on how they did their naming through this whole piece. It was US 62 with State Highway 3 as a fault route, but for some reason they had it broke up. 1 mile was this, 1 mile was this, 1 mile was this, and 1 mile was this. So we had to go through and make a lot of fixes on that. Like I said, if I had it to do over again, I'm not sure I'd use them.
Whatever you took and implemented their data, then you just have a set of rules that you always apply to that new data coming from NavTech, and
yes,
that set of rules stays the same?
Yeah, rules stay the same.
So what I'm hearing is that you think your state data that you have, transportation layers, is probably better than what NavTech's.
In all aspects, except addressing, which is where Charles comes in. If I was able to take an addressing platform and attach it to our state data, then I would have drop-kicked NavTech right out the window. But it wouldn't be. So I could not address, and that was my primary issue. And, you know, with these applications being the general public, they had to have the ability of literally keying in an address.
Is that something we could work on and get there?
I hope so. Just hope I don't retire before that.
I was looking at that routing aspect. I need to visit with you about what you need in there as far as routing restrictions as well.
Well, the restrictions, you know, are all...
Rules, rather.
You know, well, yeah, rules is the big thing. And the main thing with routing on the rules is direction. You've got to have direction in there. All right, if you've got a two-way... I mean, you've got a single line there, but you have to have it coded as two-way, right? And then you're going to have other areas that is one-way and one-way. And if you don't have those, routing is out the door. You got to have those. Everything else can be added in. Anything else?
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. There are three different kinds of permits out there. Let me rephrase that. There is almost 1,000 different kinds of permits out there, but there's three main categories. They have a single purpose permit, they have a monthly permit, and they have an annual permit. And on the singles, those are the ones where I'm moving an oil rig that is 16 foot tall and 16 foot wide and 100 feet long, out to an oil location. That weighs, say, 95,000 pounds. That's a single. And that's the most. They do have monthlies, and monthlies are limited to certain things as prescribed by state law. And state law actually lists them out, that you can get a monthly permit for these types of things. And there are specific dimensions you have to meet to be inside of that monthly permit. You can't be more than this, you can't be more than this, you can't be more than this, you can't be heavier than this. On the annuals, it's kind of the same thing, except even narrowed down even farther. On the annuals, you can do an annual permit for a particular truck. And it's tied to the truck, it's tagged, and it's DOT number. And that annual permit will allow that truck to move a certain object as many times as it wants throughout the state, as long as it's no more than this, no more than this, and no heavier than this. And with an annual, there's only certain roads that you can drive on. With an annual permit, you can't drive on the interstates, but you can drive on the state highways. And you had to program all that stuff in there. So there are hundreds of them out there like that. I tell you what was also difficult, too. You guys are going to love this. You have Turnpike Authority involved with this because, of course, a lot of trucks are going to be going on the turnpikes. Prior to this project, the Turnpike Authority just had a principal type of thing. They would say, all right, if you had a pike pass, you could be 12 foot wide or less because you're going to be going through pike pass lanes. If you don't have a pike pass, you can only be 10 foot wide or less because then you'll be going through the turnpike gates. And then they assign one vertical clearance for each turnpike, which they just find whatever their lowest one is. And for the Turner Turnpike, if the lowest one was 14 feet tall, then the entire height restriction was 14 feet. Well, when we told them what we're doing here and we're analyzing everything, we asked them, why don't you go out and remeasure everything? All right, remember, no pike pass, 10 foot wide, you can drive on the turnpike, right? They went out and remeasured every one of their turnpike gates, and guess what? Almost all of them were exactly 10 feet wide. I'm surprised we haven't taken out I don't know how many turnpike gates, because and the whole Turnpike Authority was sucking wind. You could tell because you don't want that. And there's even worse cases, because there's certain sections of turnpikes that the toll gates are still underneath bridges. A good example is on Cimarron Turnpike, the first one there at US 177. The actual thing is all underneath the bridge right there. And the pike pass lane, they have a pike pass lane in the center that's right at 12 foot wide, exactly 12 foot wide. But if you're coming on US 177 and getting on to the Cimarron, and you only have one gate to go through, whether you got a pike pass or not, and it's 8 foot 6 inches wide. Restriction manager, that's where this comes in, because we could actually put restrictions in there based on all those different functions. And the permit asks whether or not it has a pike pass or not. If you don't put a pike pass in there, it automatically locks you out of all of the turnpikes if you're greater than 10 feet. Actually now, 9 foot 6 inches, they changed it. But if your load is wider than 9 foot 6, it automatically knows to not allow the router to allow you on the turnpikes if you don't have a pike pass. If you do have a pike pass, it still has to analyze all the restrictions for all the gates to see if that pike pass can still make it through. It's amazing stuff, man. I tell you, it has made me appreciate more how close I am to retirement.
Jay, it sounds like there are, what you were just saying, there are some cases where you actually have to track lanes.
Yes.
Do you track lanes on all your routes? All your lanes on all your routes?
No. We're only doing it right now on the turnpikes, just because of the gate situation. We are looking at the phase two to be able to do that, so that way we can then look at vertical clearances based on the lanes. If I've got six lanes, three lanes going eastbound and three lanes going westbound underneath the bridge, and most bridges, they're kind of arced through there. Well, my right-hand lane might have a vertical clearance of this. but my left-hand lane might have a vertical clearance of this. And I've got to be able to analyze all of those. Right now, what I'm doing is, for eastbound traffic, I take my lowest point and just bring it across. And same thing on my westbound. But in the future, that's what we're looking at doing for the lanes, is actually seeing, reading the arc on there and giving vertical restrictions based on the lanes. One of the other things we're looking at doing in phase two as well is, you know, we generated that one route. I'm going to go if I still have that up or not. We generated that one route for that piece. And it's amazing how many trucking companies are looking at us and going, why do we have to go this way? You know, they're sitting there going, well, I don't like this. Why do I have to go this way? I would prefer to do this or do this or do this. And the problem is, with 13,000 permit restrictions and I got another, you know, 150 of my temporary restrictions, I just can't turn my restrictions on, because it'd be too cluttered for them to even see what's going on. So in phase two, what we're also doing is to be able to analyze the actual truck dimensions and then turn on restrictions only based on those truck dimensions. So that means that if that truck is 14 foot tall, I will only turn on restrictions that are have a height clearance of less than 14. And on my weight, it was 90,000 pounds. Any bridge that can handle 90,000 or better is fine, but if it's below 90,000, we'll turn those on. So that way then the trucking industry can actually see, well, I got a restriction here, got one here, got one here. Well, that's why it made me go this way. It's more customer service than it is anything, but it's more for ourselves, because then it helps us not have to go through all the questioning and the shooting hours, basically.
One more question, Jay.
Yeah.
If they prefer to go through Elk City for whatever reason, and you drag that to go to Google Maps, like for that mobile app on iPhone?
Elk City? Uh-huh.
If they want to go through Elk City for some reason.
Oh, actually, the DPS policy is whatever the route is generated is generated based on the shortest, safest, shortest route. And they basically say that, all right, if you what you get is what you get. If you want a detour, basically, and we have a lot of that asset, because they'll have portable buildings and they'll load three portable buildings on their truck, and then they'll want to make a stop here in Elk City, and then they'll make another one down here in Hobart, and then they'll go ahead and go into their main office. But by state law, by definition of state law, those are different routes. So they have to have a permit to Elk City. Then they can get a permit from Elk City to Hobart. Then they can get the permit from Hobart to Oklahoma City, because they're dropping, because their load is changing at each one of those pieces there. So by state law, they have to have a separate permit for each one. Now, we did have some that said, well, just what if I just want to go that way just because? We did tell everybody that's all right, just because you love to eat at the Elk City restaurant there, we're not going to generate the route just so that way you can go and eat at your favorite restaurant. It is what it is, you know, for this piece here. Yes, sir.
Is there any reason to have doubt that this permit won't be sufficient to gain a permit on a different state basis? Let's say you're driving through Colorado or any state. Is there any reason that this program wouldn't be sufficient to gain a permit based on the standards?
If Wyoming took it and you know, got into the Wyoming area, had a rally against for that, knew all their restrictions and put their restrictions, then yeah, you could literally take this, send it over into another state, and then have that state put their information into it, and it should work just fine.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this is on cloud, right?
Not yet, but that's one of the things I'm trying to work with some of the other states, is if we take it up to a cloud level, then state of Kansas could send their permits up to it, state of Oklahoma could send theirs, and lots of people could send theirs, and then the trucking companies could get those out.
But so is it still on anything where they have to download software to run it separate, or is it run right off the regular browsers?
No download. All you have to have is an internet connection. One of the things I've been telling a lot of the trucking companies, I've been doing training sessions for all the trucking industry people. I've done a little over 400 people training so far. And one of the things I tell them is, it doesn't matter, you don't have to be at work to run it. You could be at home. You could be having insomnia at 3:30 in the morning at home, and you could pull it up and go right in and start working. All you need is your login for your company, and boom, you're ready to go, because there's no software that has to download to your computer. It's all internet-based. All you have to have is an internet connection. We do everything, and I mean everything, back at ODOT. Yes, sir?
You're hosting it as well?
Until OSF says otherwise.
All right. Well, Jay, thank you very much. We appreciate it. All right. General GIS discussion, any data issues anyone might want to bring up, talk about, anybody have any comments?
Is there anything regarding the IT consolidation and GIS?
Nothing on the burner. We're having our first meeting next week
with
OSF. So,
well,
I don't think Mr. Pettit's involved in this one. It's their HR people. It's going to start the discussion. So, we're going to see where that goes. Mr. Thralls and me and HR officials will sit down and talk.
As far as whether or not GIS will have its own little kingdom?
Well, we're going to be asking questions all the time. We'll see what how this is going to shake out.
It sounds like, you know, from what's been said, you know, in the process that's been going on, basically, you're in IT. You're going into OSF, unless, you know, you said that they may be carving out a little space for GIS to have, for the OGI to have its own staff.
Well, it makes sense, because we already have that office set up, and it has a function, statutorily defined. We just need to basically staff it and get some funding and move on down the road.
Right.
That's kind of where we're at.
Okay, so you said you're meeting with us next week.
Yes. So we'll see where that goes. You know, it's a process. We're starting the process, and we're going to see it through. Okay. Anything else?
Quick question. Does anybody know if the NRCS is going to be doing 2012?
I don't know. Julie, do you know anything about that?
You mean flight, aerial?
Flight, not for 2012.
I assume we are. You know, I haven't heard anything that I can find out.
Somebody asked me that this morning from our agency.
Yeah, it's a separate for May.
The name.
The same.
We're scheduled for 2013, 3 years after. It's every 3 years. But
they'll get it every 2 years.
Yeah, but that was kind of a fluke.
Yeah, they had extra money in 1 year, so they did 2 years worth of the states at the same time. We were in the third year, which was bumped up to the second year. Since the 1 meter, the policy was once every 3 years.
Three.
And according to all their projections that they've got on the FSA Aerial Field Office website, they're keeping true with the third of the states each year.
Have to wait another year.
Yeah.
What it looks like. And I don't see them getting a big flush of money the way things are going up in Washington. So we'll be fortunate probably to get it in 2013.
I have noticed that if you switch between Google Earth, Bing Maps, and then the imagery that ESRI serves out, depending on, you know, they all get photography from different companies, you can pretty much get every year. You know, just depending on which application you use, you can usually see.
Bing has been exceptional in the rural areas. I mean, our forestry people, especially, forestry lady is here today, and she said one of her, our forestry people told her the other day, and she told me, you know, yesterday or the day before, showed me, and basically, I didn't just plumb rural parts of the state. It's like, you know, 6 inch or 1 foot resolution, and that's just what they, you know, the way it is. So, I mean, and I, there's no provenance on it. I don't know, you know, if there's a place to find out on Bing Maps where the, what the age or the date of photography is, but it was, you know, a lot better than the name that we have right now.
Now, Google's doing the same thing. They've flown parts of the state in fairly high resolution. I know we're doing some watershed dam analysis, and you get up around east or west of Perry, and you find photography that's probably at least 1 foot resolution, but then you get east of there, and it's back to actually before our 2010 photography, because the work on the 177 bridge up there shows up in 2010, but not in the Google, you know. So yeah, it's
just switch around.
You just switch around all these different ones. So,
Esri has their world imagery layer, which is still currently at the 2008 name. They've got high resolution in urban areas, but they're still at the 2008 name. And I talked to them in 2010, and they said they were going to put the 2010 data on. This was available or after next update cycle, but they never have done that. So we're still.
It'd be nice if we could get some funding to get us a one complete statewide leaf off color. What are you doing? We need about $1 million, I think, probably to get that done. I don't see that in the cards either. We'll continue to do what we've got. Okay, any new business we can bring up?
One quick thing, just everybody feel free to take a brochure. This is for the National GIS for Transportation Conference. It's the 25th anniversary of the conference. Not too many conferences have been around for 25 years. And this is also the last year that I'll be chairing the conference, but we're doing a lot of special things for the 25th anniversary. Not to mention we have Jack Dangerman that's coming in to do the keynote for us, because he was actually at the first one and helped set the first conference up. So everybody, feel free to take a little deal. It's in Loveland, Colorado, beautiful place, beautiful facilities, not far away, so we can actually drive it. It wouldn't be too costly on our travel costs.
Okay.
It's over there on the deal.
Thank you very much for that. How about Scott? You got anything you want to bring up on Scott?
Real quick, if you haven't kind of planned for it, look at going down to McAllen, Texas for our regional conference. We've been down there. They have a huge growth down there. It's amazing. I don't remember, Shelly and I, a couple of other board members have gone down there. I was surprised at how much growth they've had down there with GIS and the funding and the resources they've got. Another thing real quick, our GIS basics class that we offered at conference was such a big hit. We've actually offered two more offerings of it, one basics one class and one basics two class. Both of them are already filled. We already have one basics one class in December. We're fixing to have the basics two class in January 11th and 12th. And the McAllen conference is March 26th to the 30th. If you have any suggestions for training, GIS training in Oklahoma, holler at Shelly or I. We're trying to take and bring some really cost-effective training to Oklahoma. We've got two or three resources out there that are contacting us, and we've got some resources that if you have, you know, need for any kind of pipeline analysis training or any kind of Python training or things of that nature, if you have specialized training and can get us enough people, we'll get your training taken care of as cheap as you can find it around here. So holler at one of us.
And also the ARC Basics trainer contacted me this morning, and she is thinking of offering the classes again in May and June. So if you have people, that's something that we may get set up. So that may be coming as well.
As long as we're filling up, we'll start pushing more training classes out there. That helps the local users get some more cost-effective training, because it's always cheaper if you don't have to travel somewhere and do all the overnight and everything else. How long you can pretty much drive there in a day. So.
Hey, Shelly, did you want to say anything about MAGIC?
MAGIC is April 23rd through the 28th. It's in Kansas City. Online registration is already open. It's $265 this year. They are still looking for abstracts and presenters. I'll be sending out more information in the coming weeks about that. I'll be posting everything that they send out to the listserv, so if you have any questions, contact me about that. And also, GIS Day at the Capitol is March 14th, so we are accepting registrations for that. And we will be doing two floors again, local and state governments on the fourth floor, and then private industry on the second. So if you have any private industry or anything like that that you'd like to invite, please let me know, and I'll be certainly happy to send out an invitation about that.
Okay. Any other announcements? Okay, well, looks like we need to look at a meeting next month, February, first Friday in February. It's going to be the 3rd. Okay. All right. Same time, same place. If there's nothing else, I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved, sir.
Seconded. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you very much. Have a great day and weekend. Enjoy the warm weather while it's here.
Good job.
I do have one thing that's new.
A new iPad?
Oh, I got an iPad.
Oh.
Not a new iPad, I got an iPad. It's just the regular. I don't have 3G.
And you have to pay for the data package.
Yeah.
I'm just not doing
but this one hooks up to wireless just really, really well.
It has mine.
So, I got that one. Did you? Actually, I thought that.
I actually opened the case for
did you?
Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Well, actually.
Oh, yeah. I was
thinking that.